Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Tuesday, May 17th. Today, more than 900 people in Colorado died of fentanyl overdoses in 2021. That's at least four times the number who died 3 years ago. Now, new treatment programs are emerging. So, what do they look like? Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Pinnacle Assurance. Pinnacle Assurance provides workers' comp insurance and was recently named one of the most community-minded companies in Colorado for the third year in a row. Last year, Pinnacle donated $1.5 million in grants, donations, and scholarships to communities across the state. Learn more about how Pinnacle puts care to work at pinnacle.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this date, in 1973, three simultaneous underground nuclear blasts were set off in Rio Blanco County. According to one local resident, quote, a sneeze in Denver would have been louder. From 1957 to 1973, the Atomic Energy Commission conducted 27 nuclear detonations and planned many more as part of Operation Plowshare, an attempt to use peaceful nuclear explosions to accomplish worthwhile goals. Most tests were conducted in Nevada, but two bombings happened in Colorado. The first was in 1969 in Garfield County, which attempted to break open shale deposits. In that case, the natural gas extracted proved too contaminated by radiation to use. The second, in Rio Blanco County, also proved unsuccessful in releasing clean liquid fuel. In the wake of these failures, Colorado amended their constitution to ban nuclear detonations in state without voter approval. Operation Plowshare fizzled in the face of environmental fears, and in its place, the oil industry turned to hydraulic fracturing, which has also been subject to lots of controversy. Now, a quick message from our sponsors, the Colorado Education Association. The Colorado Education Association is made up of more than 39,000 educators across Colorado, all working together in a strong union to make sure students get the exceptional public schools they deserve. Learn more about CEA by visiting coloradoea.org. Next, our feature story. More than 900 people in Colorado died of fentanyl overdoses in 2021, which amounts to at least four times the number who died 3 years ago, according to the state health department. As the fentanyl crisis has worsened in the state, new treatment programs are emerging, including a detox center in Littleton, where patients in recovery spend up to 8 days with plush bedding, a flat-screen TV, meals delivered by Uber Eats, popcorn, and other amenities often found in hotels, all for nearly $2,000 a night. Colorado Sun Human Services reporter Jen Brown talks to reporter Erica Brunlin about how detox centers and opioid clinics in the state are battling addiction and trying to prevent people from overdosing after they've detoxed.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for taking time to talk to us today.
Hi, Erica. Thank you.
So amid the fentanyl epidemic and counterfeit drug epidemic Colorado is facing, you report on a detox center in Littleton and an opioid clinic in Denver just a few miles from each other that are both trying to help people addicted to drugs overcome their addiction. But as you report, Jen, their efforts play out in wildly different ways. At Denver Health's clinic, hundreds of people get help a day, lining up for cups of pink methadone, while at Gallus Medical Detox, six people at a time can stay overnight in pretty luxurious rooms that could almost be mistaken for hotel rooms. It's a really interesting juxtaposition. Are both of these detox centers finding success, Jen?
Yes, they really are. And you really kind of described them pretty succinctly there. But it was a fascinating story to report because first I went to this Gallus Detox, Gallus Medical Detox, it's called. It's in Littleton. It's in like this strip mall kind of medical office building where you would have no idea that you're going into a detox facility. And this is a place for people that frankly have money and have good insurance. It costs almost $2,000 a day to stay there. And like you said, each person, only six people at a time, but each person gets their private room with a queen bed and, you know, nice bedding and this TV and, you know, Netflix and Hulu. And, you know, they pass around restaurant menus and their meals show up by, you know, delivery. And, you know, there's a Keurig machine, like it's all as comfortable as they can make it. And, but you got to come in and be able to pay. And then they will try to send it to your insurance company. And if, you know, it's reimbursed, you'll get somewhat of your money back. Meanwhile, you know, this is not how most people are able to detox from opioids, or to get off opioids, I should say. So instead of going to this like full medical detox place, you have 1,000 people are getting Suboxone and other medicines to help them stay off of opioids at Denver Health. And they do this at their outpatient opioid, you know, addiction clinic, and also through primary healthcare, you know, doctors just prescribing for their patients medications, primarily Suboxone, which is, you know, basically like covers the opioid receptors, so you don't go through these huge cravings to use any type of opioid, whether it's prescription or fentanyl or heroin or what have you. So there are two very different ways and two very different payment systems. You know, at Denver Health, when you're going to these clinics, or you're going to the methadone clinic that they run, where you pick up your little cup of pink liquid every day and drink it, that is funded by Medicaid. So you can get that treatment without being a rich person.
It's so fascinating to me just how you describe all the amenities at Gallus Medical Detox. You know, these plush comforters, flat screen TVs, access to meals delivered by Uber Eats, a Keurig machine, as you just mentioned. I mean, these really luxurious amenities. And as you cite in your story, Medicaid, which is the government insurance program for low-income people, is not accepted at Gallus. Does that mean that this particular center is only really accessible to a certain subset of people?
Yes, for sure. You know, you have to have the means to get in there, and you have to pay up front. So, of course, that's going to eliminate quite a lot of people. But you know what? You know, on the flip side of that conversation, not everyone is going to go to Denver Health, downtown Denver, and go to a methadone clinic every day. Like, that is not their, what would fit into their lifestyle. So I guess, you know, on the bright side of all this is that we're seeing more different types of treatments for different people, but yet there's definitely a have and a have not situation.
And now Gallus Medical Detox has this, quote, proprietary protocol to treat addiction. What, Jen, does that involve, and what does that look like?
So they are a medical facility. So this means, you know, they're, you know, a step below, say, an emergency department or ICU or something like that. But they're a step above going to, you know, a rehab facility or some kind of center that doesn't have these highly trained nurses. So in this like suite of rooms that I've described in the center, there's one of those nurses stations that looks a lot like, you know, any wing of a hospital where, you know, they're behind glass and they have all these computer monitors and they're watching patients on video, as well as, you know, seeing all their vitals on their screens. And, you know, it'll beep at them if somebody has too high of a heart rate or is having a seizure or like whatever. They can see this and they're on it. And so these are highly trained, you know, critical care nurses, and they're able to give IV drugs, which is big. Like, not, you know, not all rehab facilities have that medical authority. So these nurses can give injections, you know, into the muscle, and they instantly hook patients up to IV. And so they're, as these patients are coming off fentanyl or heroin or alcohol or whatever they're there for, they're getting drugs intravenously, fluids, but also, you know, nausea medication, you know, anxiety meds, antibiotics, vitamins, you know, pain meds, whatever is needed to like kind of get them through this misery of detoxing, because it feels, you know, absolutely horrible and no one wants to do it. So if you're able to check into a place like this and take a week and get it out of your system, and all these nurses and staff are here to like make you comfortable, it's pretty ideal, you know. And then for fentanyl patients, they do this thing they call accelerated microdosing. So they'll give them some of the Suboxone under the tongue, and, you know, it dissolves, and that's, it's just in such tiny doses that they're not really intending to put the patient on that medication long term. It's just sort of a microdosing treatment to get through this horrible week-long detox.
And where do patients typically go after staying at Gallus Medical Detox or after receiving treatment through Denver Health's opioid clinic? What options do they have for a next step to keep them on track?
Well, what is really great about this Gallus Detox place is that, you know, according to their own stats, something like 87% of patients are leaving detox, you know, and going into some sort of a treatment program. So that might be a sober living house or, you know, a more traditional like long-term rehab center where you have like group therapy sessions every day. Or maybe they're going to try like an outpatient where they live at home, but they go every day to therapies and group sessions. So that's a really good number. You don't see that very often, like 87%. Like if you're talking about people who go detox at like a hospital, right? Like maybe they've overdosed or whatever and they detox while they're in ICU or something, like you're going to get maybe 20 something percent of them into a treatment program right after. I'm not talking about any particular hospital, but just in general. So that's good. They're getting after care. And then, you know, what's different about the Denver Health Clinic that I see is that basically these patients are getting on Suboxone. Like how a patient might come to that kind of treatment is they did go into the emergency room because they were maybe had an overdose reversal or, you know, an infection at their injection site or something. So they end up in the emergency department and then the counselors there are like, hey, look, you know, you have an addiction problem into opioids and we have this clinic, outpatient clinic, they can get you right on Suboxone. And this basically, you know, it's a pill, clear, you know, curbs your cravings and you don't have to go through that like horrible withdrawal period because you're taking this medication to make you feel okay.
And one of the big concerns that you raise in your story is the risk of overdose after detox. Why are people who are recovering from addiction more susceptible to overdose after they detox? And how do clinics try to get ahead of that risk?
Well, you know, if you detox, like everything's out of your system, right? So if you walk out of a detox facility, there's no drugs in your body, you have zero tolerance for any of the drugs that you've been taking. So say you're addicted to fentanyl and, you know, you've detoxed from it, you go out and you have a relapse, you have a much higher chance of dying from that overdose than you did before because your body is just not ready to handle those drugs. So some of the criticism of these detox centers are that they demand perfection. You know, you can't really mess up afterward. You can't relapse because you're putting yourself at a real high risk of dying. And, you know, that's different than, like I said, if you go on Suboxone, because then you've curbed these cravings and you are not going to be tempted to use and overdose and die. So the statistics between those are pretty huge. You know, something like if you detox in jail, which of course is not ideal, but say you go into jail, you end up detoxing because you don't have your fentanyl, and then you're released without any medication-assisted treatment, it's like 120 times higher that you're going to die of an overdose. So like I said, it kind of demands perfection, this detox route.
Yeah, just incredibly high stakes for people trying to recover from addiction. Thank you so much, Jen, for taking time to chat today and for continuing to report on an epidemic that has clearly taken a toll on so many lives here in Colorado.
Thanks, Erica. And, you know, you mentioned that I just looked at the latest numbers and more than 900 people died of fentanyl overdoses in 2021 in Colorado, which is like four times as high as it was just 3 years earlier. So it's really, you know, a huge crisis. So any type of treatment centers that we can get, I think will be used.
And much needed. Thank you, Jen.
Thanks, Erica.
To read more, go to coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. The largest hydropower customer on the Colorado River system says waning electricity production has not significantly impacted Colorado, yet. Tri-State Generation and Transmission Association has received about two-thirds of its normal hydropower supply this year. But only 8% of Tri-State's total energy comes from the Colorado River Storage Project, Losing any carbon-free energy source is not ideal, as the co-op is aiming to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions by at least 80% by 2030. Hydropower accounted for about 53% of the renewable energy generated in the western U.S. last year, not including nuclear generation, and about 16% of total western power generation. After census takers struggled to count every U.S. resident in their home during the pandemic, counties in Colorado are finding discrepancies with the tally that will inform how many federal dollars their communities receive. Colorado gets about $19.2 billion a year in census-guided funds, which equals about $3,500 per resident. That means a place like Pitkin County, where officials estimate about 1,000 people were not counted, could lose $35 million over the next decade. Questions are also being raised in other counties with mountain towns, including Eagle and Summit counties. State demographer Elizabeth Garner has been working with both Pitkin and Eagle counties as they investigate potential undercounts of housing units, which could translate into an undercount of residents. A monster fire churning in northern New Mexico for more than a month has blackened enough acreage to earn a place in the state's record books. Aside from being the largest wildfire currently burning in the U.S., the fire spreading through the Sangre de Cristo mountain range is now the largest in the arid state's recorded history. It covers more than 465 square miles of mountainous terrain. More than 260 homes have burned, and more evacuations were prompted over the weekend as the blaze moved through dry and in some cases dead stands of pine and fir trees. Fires also are burning elsewhere in New Mexico and in Colorado. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.